On behalf of the Interstate Technology and Regulatory Council, welcome to today's online panel event, Stormwater Best Management Practices Performance Evaluation. We're very pleased to have you join us today. My name is Mary Yelk, and I'll be serving as your producer today. I will cover just a few slides at the beginning to help you better understand how you can actively participate today, and then I will turn it over to ITRC Stormwater Best Management Practices team. Today's training is sponsored by the Interstate Technology and Regulatory Council, or the ITRC, and is hosted by the U.S. EPA Cleanup Information Network, or CLUIN. Today's panel session is focused on an ITRC guidance document, Stormwater Best Management Practices Performance Evaluation. It is an online guidance document, and although we will be able to introduce you to some of the basics of the guidance document today, as well as answer your questions, we do expect that there's much more information that you could find useful, and we encourage you, if you haven't already, to please look at that guidance document in detail and see how it may be able to apply and help you at the sites that you are working on. Today's session is scheduled for approximately an hour. We are recording today's event so that we will be able to share it as an archive to others, assuming we have adequate audio quality. The panelists will be in control of their slides as they move through today's session. If you are someone who would like to have a copy for future reference or perhaps have be able to control your own slides today, you can access a copy of the slides by going over to that Stormwater panel page you were directed to when you logged in today. You can access that in the related links section. Make sure you scroll down to the bottom and click Stormwater panel page and then click Browse to. We'd like to have this session be as interactive as possible today. We want to get your feedback and certainly your questions. For those of you that during the registration process you entered questions in when you registered, we very much appreciate that. But we will take questions both verbally for those of you that are on the phone line today, as well as from that Q&A pod in the lower right-hand corner of your screen. So if you do have a question related to the Stormwater Guidance Document, or if you're having technical difficulties, please let us know through that Q&A pod. We will take a few breaks for questions and answers, and we will try to get to as many of those as possible. For those of you that do need a certificate of participation to document your attendance today, you can fill out the online feedback form at the conclusion of today's training event or today's panel event, and a certificate will be generated for you. Make sure you click the box to certify you attended. A special welcome to all of you who this may be your first ITRC event. We're glad you joined us. ITRC is hosted by the Environmental Council of States, and we are a network of state regulators as well as federal partners, including the Department of Energy, Department of Defense, and the Environmental Protection Agency, working alongside our industry affiliates, program members, academia, and community stakeholders. All these groups work together to find solutions and create tools and resources so that we may make better decisions at environmental sites. The full ITRC disclaimer is available on the ITRC website. If you do plan to use ITRC materials, we do ask that you review that disclaimer and usage policy and be sure to credit ITRC. ITRC is partially funded by the U.S. government. ITRC nor the U.S. government warranty materials or endorse any specific products. ITRC will have some new teams starting at the beginning of the year. I expect in the next few months we will be opening registration for those teams. So if you'd like to find out how you can become more involved with ITRC, perhaps participate on a team or take a training course, please be sure to utilize the information available on the ITRC website. At this point, it's my pleasure to introduce our moderator today, and that is Rebecca Higgins with the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Rebecca has been co-leader of the Stormwater Best Management Practices team for ITRC. And at this point, I'll turn it over to Rebecca to move us forward.
Great. Thank you so much, Mary. Welcome, everybody, to ITRC's Stormwater BMP Performance Evaluation Live Panel Session, the first of its kind. I'm Rebecca Higgins, as Mary just said. I'm a co-team leader of this awesome group of people that has been working very hard over the last 3 years to bring you this very valuable technical guidance. We are made up of experts from the team in this live panel session today, and we have designed it to assist you with the use of the document, tools within the document, and show you how to apply this information at your site, specifically You'll see that orange bar is up on the left-hand side of your screen there. That's encouraging you to go ahead and answer the polling question down below so that we can have some interactive feedback. So as I'm rambling on here, you guys can be checking out all of the information as it comes through live in that poll. So what we do know is there's no national consensus on how to determine which post-construction BMPs are going to achieve the pollution reductions necessary in order to comply with all of the diverse and complex stormwater requirements set forth at various regulatory authority levels. Many states and local municipalities have robust stormwater management programs with very specific standards and manuals that detail stormwater design, installation, and maintenance requirements already. But other states have only adopted maybe federal regulations or maybe haven't provided the local authorities with the additional resources or guidance necessary to assist in their full implementation. So it's really become a challenge for many of us involved in land development and the stormwater management programs across the country to employ innovative treatments with a sense of assurance for how that BMP is going to perform in the long run. So if that sounds familiar, we're glad you're here. Whether you're here at a state level with federally adopted standards or whether your state has a sophisticated state-level guidance, we think you're going to benefit from this open discussion and forum today. It's a place where we're going to try to share stories of BMP performance, ask questions about how to apply our guidance at your site, and we hope that we can share our perspectives and yours on the need for even maybe a national permanent certification program. So with that, go ahead, keep answering those polls down below and kind of digest that information and the results there. But first, let's talk about this guidance. Okay, so the primary objective of the ITRC Stormwater BMP Evaluation Guidance document is to provide you with a centralized resource of information on how the BMP effectiveness works and how to provide you with guidance on how to implement it and all of this information throughout your BMP's life cycle. So really specifically, we believe the document should be able to do a few things. We think it should serve as a guidance during post-construction BMP screening, again, focus there on post-construction, but also selection, installation, operation, and monitoring and maintenance phases. We think it's there to provide you with direction to available resources to help assess the performance of your BMP relative to meeting applicable standards locally. We also think it should provide additional information on potential limitations and some of the great benefits of specific BMPs. Of course, we're not endorsing specific BMPs, but we do hope to guide you to additional information. We hope this also can direct you to a broad array of information sources, much more so than is currently available in any one location, really helping you to avoid or help resolve regulatory conflicts and encourage the use of emerging technologies, of course. So there's a few limitations to the guidance, and what it does not do is it does not address sediment and erosion BMPs during construction. Again, this is just post-construction. And also it does not replace policy or any regulatory standards. It's not going to provide you a very hyper-detailed design criteria set or any individual site-specific use of BMPs in terms of the design details. That's left for your engineering professionals to make sure that gets done correctly. We're not going to provide you with an exhaustive BMP selection tool, but when we get to the tool and its details, I think you're going to be pretty well satisfied. We're also not going to verify or certify BMPs, and we'll get more into the discussion and discerning between evaluation, verification, and certification later in the discussion. So with this awareness, we're going to just jump right into meeting our panelists and responders today. Their full bios, as Mary said, are available on the CLUIN link at the bottom right of the corner of your screen there. And you can go to that as I'm just giving them a brief introduction, and I won't be able to do them all justice, but it's a little who's who. So first, our panelists are up, and that's Patrick. Starts off with Patrick Say. He's a senior professional engineer with Dalton, Olmsted, and Flugelvand out of Seattle, Washington. And prior to working for DOF, he worked for 11 years in the environmental consulting field with AMEC Earth and Environmental. He specializes in managing environmental concerns at complex sites with a focus on stormwater management for industrial clients in the Pacific Northwest. Allison Dunaway is my co-team leader, and she just transitioned from formerly managing the Wetland and Stream Protection Program in the Virginia Department of Environmental Quality into now becoming a senior business analyst. Allison has been an avid member and a team leader within ITRC for the last 8 years. Brandon Steets is a senior principal and professional chemical engineer with GeoSyntech Consultants in Santa Barbara, California. He's served as a consultant since 2000 and recently advised the National Academy of Sciences Industrial Stormwater Committee on EPA's 2020 multi-sector general permit renewal. So that's our list of folks that are panelists today, and those are the people that are going to be talking to you live on the phone or through your Adobe Connect. And now, moving on to our responders, these are the folks that are going to be in the background, also team members, and they're going to be answering your questions in written form. So if you have a question at any point, put it into that Q&A box, and these folks are going to be working hard to get you the right answer. So our responders today start with Toni McCrory. She's the director of the U.S. Environmental Health and Safety Compliance for Walmart Corporation. She's worked within the water compliance field since 2008, and she oversees all water-related compliance programs for over 5,200 U.S. Walmart facilities. Chris Nickel is the director of Environmental Health and Safety at Drake University in Des Moines, Iowa. Before joining Drake, he worked in the private sector in environmental health and safety and as an environmental compliance consultant. And last but not least, we've got Kevin Lanau, who is a corporate engineering principal and a professional engineer in 21 states with groundwater and environmental services out of Eagan, Minnesota. Since 1982, Kevin's worked at GES, specializing in investigation, remediation, and site progression of a wide variety of industrial and petroleum projects. Okay, so that's enough about who's who. Let's move on and get to the nitty-gritty here. We're going to now hear from the panelists themselves about how the guidance and tool can benefit almost any site. We're going to start with stories from each of them on how to use the tool and the document, and then we're going to take your questions as they come up after each anecdote. We'll do that verbally, but in the meanwhile, I'd love to hear from you in these Q&A boxes, and our responders are ready to answer your questions just as everybody's talking. So, with that, I'm going to hand it off to Patrick Say. Go ahead, Pat.
Thanks, Rebecca. So the biggest question I get as an environmental consultant for wastewater and stormwater treatment is, will this treatment system work? And that's a very complicated question to answer. Compared to wastewater or environmental remediation treatment system, stormwater is kind of the Wild West because we can't really agree on even the nomenclature to begin with. We spent a lot of time on this team just trying to work out acronyms and what words to use for stormwater treatment BMPs that make sense to everybody as a group. There are so many vendors out there with different types of technology. And then each state, as Rebecca noted before, has its own rules. And then county and city rules are on top of those. And then on top of that, there's differences for industrial stormwater versus municipal and other regulatory guidelines. So all of that makes it very complicated to say, will this treatment system work, without knowing very site-specific rules, regulations, and then also the treatment technologies that are available for that, the conditions of that site. So there's very few regulators that have a treatment certification program or provide help for site owners or operators to meet those regulatory goals. And it's really hard for a person that's focused, a company that's focused on building manufacturing or providing a service to their customers, unless they're really large, they don't usually have a dedicated staff for stormwater. So I have a lot of stormwater treatment being managed by the maintenance staff because they're cleaning out the catch basins, they're cleaning off the facility, and they're trying to figure out how to get better treatment and meet the regulatory goals for the facility. So defining what successful treatment is and whether a system is going to work is very hard. And the goal for this document is to provide information that you can, as an owner or site operator, or as a regulator, help assess what is reasonable for installation time, implementation, O&M, removal and destruction efficiency for your treatment BMPs, and then the costs versus O&M and implementation, the long-term and short-term operations. All of these things we're trying to capture in this document, and that helps us help you move forward with your treatment goals. So I'm just going to go a basic overview of the document. It's a living document. It's online. There are, on the left-hand side, there's a table of contents for the main sections of the document. And then if you scroll down on the bottom, there are also a glossary, stormwater references, and stormwater acronyms. As I said, the acronyms could vary quite a bit, so make sure you take a look at that when you're going through this document and you understand what we're talking about, because depending on the region of the country, it could be different for you on what a specific term means. And we tried to come to consensus with over, you know, a couple hundred people on this team initially, helping figure out how to talk about things in a similar way and make sure we're on the same platform to begin with. Let me go back to the table contents on the left, circled in red. I'm just zooming in on that so you can see a little bit better those options there. So we have introduction, data applicability, BMP screening tool, installation, operational strategies, and additional information. The introduction just goes over the limitations of the document, and Rebecca basically summarized that already very briefly, so I'm not going to go into that in more detail. The data applicability is one of the key things that this document provides. Is a lot of people collect some information as part of sampling, but they don't really know if it's good information. And an example is just for treatment of metals. It matters a lot if you have dissolved metals versus total metals and if it's correlated with sediment or not. And so there's information here that can help you get an idea of what data you need and what data is good and how to collect it in a way that's representative and that will give you a better chance of finding a treatment BMP that's going to work for you. Then the BMP screening tool, we realize that this document is very dense and has a lot of information in it. And attacking it from the TOC alone might be hard to get to what you want to find if you have a very specific question or site. So you're going to describe the screening tool a little bit more detail later. Basically, you can put in contaminants of concern and site constraints into the screening tool, and it will focus you down onto a couple technologies that might be worth looking into more detail on. So that's another way to jump into this document that is a little bit quicker maybe for some people. Installation, a lot of BMPs fail if they're not installed correctly. So we have an installation section that helps give you information on all the different parts of installation and ways to check that and make sure you're gonna install it right and have the best chance for long-term operation and success. Operational strategies, I'm not gonna go into detail here either, but basically gives you, once again, more information on how to get not only initial success from implementation, but long-term operation and use of the site. Now, the screening tool also will lead you into these technologies, which will lead you then to specific BMP information sheets for each of the technologies. So I just wanted to highlight in the additional information that these BMP information sheets are several pages long, and they have a lot more detail. And you can find links to local regulations from many parts of the country. You can find a lot more detail in these information sheets. So if you want to start and just look at, you know, an information sheet for a certain kind of treatment, you can click on that and go straight there and try to get information that might apply to you. So that's the overall introduction of what the document can provide you. And then we're going to move on to other team members that can give you more details on each part.
All right, awesome. Thank you, Patrick. All right, hopefully folks can hear me just fine, and if not, go ahead and raise your hand. In the meanwhile, you can see that we are now at a poll question, and we're going to transition into our next speaker. So with that, we'll hand it off to Allison Dunaway. In the meanwhile, please be sure to answer the poll question, and we will certainly take your Q&A in written form in the bottom right-hand corner in that Q&A box. So with that, Allison, take it away.
Hey, Allison, we're not able to hear you. It's #6 to unmute.
Sorry about that. Hi, everyone. As Rebecca said, my name is Allison Dunaway, and I work for the Virginia Department of Environmental Quality. I'd like to speak with you today about a typical situation here in Virginia where the ITRC document and tool could be of great benefit. There are a lot of different scenarios in which the tool could be of use, including selection, design, plan review, and post-construction, like operations, maintenance, and inspections. But we're focusing today on initial screening of BMPs. Our scenario includes a planned mixed-use development, including parking, apartments, stores, and is very typical in our state. It's in an area that has very high land values, so maximizing developable space is very important. We're going to walk through this example using the tool that's available within the ITRC stormwater document, Hopefully you've taken a look at it and downloaded the tool. It's based in Excel, and it's a really useful and really intuitive way to screen post-construction stormwater BMPs based on the pollutants that are regulated at your site and also on other site-specific screening criteria. When we first open the tool in Excel, we encounter this pop-up. The pop-up makes sure everyone is aware that the tool doesn't include every potential pollutant and every potential BMP available everywhere. It's also really important that you use the document and the tool together, as both contain valuable and complementary information. Okay, once we click OK to close that pop-up, we see the tool itself. Zooming in a little bit, you can see on the left a list of the various pollutants of concern that are regulated in different locations across the country. And on the right, we have a space for a list of BMPs that may be appropriate based on the pollutants that you choose. On this particular site in Virginia, we need to treat for phosphorus. So we choose yes for phosphorus on the left. This is a shot of the screen once we've clicked yes for phosphorus. As soon as that is chosen, a list of secondary screening criteria become available. You'll also see on the right-hand side of the screen the 9 related practices that can treat for phosphorus. Now, because we know that land is at a premium in this location, we're going to choose yes for the secondary screening criterion. And you can see that there. In addition, there are also 5 other secondary screening criterion that are available, such as freezing conditions, like freeze-thaw cycles experiencing cold climates, arid conditions, contaminated soils, high groundwater tables, and high loading of total suspended solids. And here we have our final result. We can see that phosphorus has been chosen, that limited space has been selected, and we've narrowed down to the 6 potential BMPs that meet our criteria. As you can see, hovering over each potential BMP in the list shows an embedded hyperlink to an information sheet about each practice. We're going to focus on permeable pavement. So after clicking the link, your default web browser will open up the BMP information sheet. So we have here a description of permeable pavement and the pollutants of concern that are treated by permeable pavement. Phosphorus is of course, one of them, but permeable pavement can treat a whole host of pollutants as well. Scrolling down through the information sheet, you'll also find performance evaluation data that's available through the International BMP database. This table provides the number of BMPs represented in the data and the number of event mean concentrations or samples included in the statistics, as well as the 25th, median, and 75th percentile concentrations. Just a note that the columns labeled in represent the data resulting from samples of storm water coming into the device, and those labeled out represent the samples of effluent discharging from the device. You can also see the statistical significance of the data represented by the black and red diamond graphics. Brandon, our next panelist, will go into more detail about what each of those diamond symbols represents. Here we zoom in on our performance data summary for total phosphorus. We can see that 55 BMPs were evaluated with over 800 samples included in the statistics. We have the 25th, median, and 75th percentiles influent and effluent concentrations provided. In all the cases, the effluent concentration of phosphorus is lower than the influent concentration, indicating that permeable pavement is capable of treating for total phosphorus. Now, scrolling further, the fact sheets also have a section on certifications. This section summarizes BMP certifications, such as those by NJCAT or the Washington Tate Program for treatment of specific pollutants. If you've read the document, you know that there are generally that these certifications are generally only for proprietary BMPs. This doesn't mean that non-proprietary systems like permeable pavement are less effective. It's just that many haven't been put through the certification process. You'll also see component-specific and design criteria considerations, if available for the BMP you're reviewing. In this case, permeable pavement doesn't have component-specific considerations, but fact sheets for other BMPs this section might include general notes about the BMP, such as space restrictions, costs, landscape position, etc. Design criteria include narrative tips regarding design, such as structural information, soils information, or appropriateness of pretreatment. And scrolling further, we see a link to an example submittals checklist, information on steps to take during installation, and a link to a sample inspection checklist. Clicking on that inspections checklist provides a checklist for pre, during, and post-installation. Finally, scrolling to the bottom, we find general information on operations and maintenance, which should be considered during the selection process. And links for additional information, such as standards and specifications or state guidance on the specific BMP. So we can now take this information we've obtained and use it to determine which BMP might best fit our specific site. So with that, I apologize for the slide malfunction in the beginning of the presentation, but I can take any questions that you might have, and I'll turn it over to Rebecca to filter through those.
Awesome. Thanks, Allison. Okay, you can see, folks, that down below we've got a question about roadblocks that you've encountered with your use of the ITRC document. So if you have used it, go ahead and give us your feedback on that. But in the meanwhile, we'd love to hear from you. So who out there has a question for our panelists or responders regarding either what you've just seen presented by Allison or Patrick with the technical guidance document itself or within the functionality of the tool? Do we have any questions online? And I'll give a second here of quiet time so people can chime in. Remember, it's #6 to unmute. Okay. So don't be afraid of asking questions. We did receive a few questions before we started here today, and I'll go ahead and we'll punt these to the panelists, and any of the panelists are free to answer these questions, so just chime in if you'd like to give it a go. All right, one of the questions was, what advice would you give to a site that currently has no stormwater management plan? It's a very general question, but do we have a panelist who'd like to talk about that? Kind of a high level.
Sure, I can field that. This is Brandon. Can you hear me, Rebecca?
Yes, just fine.
So I'm assuming this is referring to an industrial site, because if it's referring to a construction site that lacks a SWIP, then there's other guidance that's available for that, but this is for post-construction structural BMPs. For an industrial site that lacks a SWIP, I don't think this is the manual for you. It will help with selection of structural controls that are more treatment-oriented and infiltration-oriented, but there are other guidance out there like the California Stormwater Quality Association BMP Handbook Series. They have that for new development, redevelopment. They have that for industrial stormwater practitioners. They have it and sites, and they have it for construction sites. And that'll guide you on how to develop a SWIP, how to structure it, what its content should be, and how a variety of BMPs should be selected, most of which are really good housekeeping and non-structural in nature.
This is Pat. Although I would say if you know what contaminants you're worried about and what area of the country you're worried about, you could put that into the tool, and then the tool will direct you to those information sheets for that possible BMPs there. And those information sheets usually have links to local guidance documents. So Brandon was referencing the California guidance. There's definitely Washington guidance and guidance from other states and Minnesota and other places where you might have a more similar climate to whatever your local climate is. And those will have more specific examples of SWIPs and other things that will be available to your local, more applicable to your local conditions.
Great. Awesome, thanks. And do we have any interested questions coming from the audience today over the phone? I see we've got a few coming in through our Q&A panel on the bottom right-hand corner. And so, if you would like to type in your question, go ahead. Don't be shy and put it in there, and our responders will certainly get to it. But folks on the phone, anybody have a question as to the guidance document itself or use or the tool at this time?
And remember, for those of you on the phone, it is #6 to unmute. And Rebecca and Allison, it looks like we had a question come in that needed some clarification related to Allison's discussion on step two. So maybe after we give the phone lines a chance to ask a question, Allison, if you could take us back in the slides to step two and go over that again, that would be helpful.
Sure.
Yeah. All right, folks on the phone, anybody have a question that you'd like to pose to all or the guidance document at this stage? If not, let's go ahead and jump back to step two just so we have some good clarification on that. Allison, are you able to maneuver back there?
Sure.
Great.
Let me get back here.
While we're looking for that, Rebecca, I'm seeing a lot of questions popping up pretty quickly that I can answer pretty fast. John Hunt asked about costs. We will not be discussing costs. The manual doesn't discuss costs. I'd refer to other literature out there for costs of structural interventions. You can find that in the WERF costing tool, for example, that has nationwide cost data. How frequently will the tool be updated? I can just speak for the performance data. I don't think we have a plan at this time for exact updates for that, but you can always access the BNP database for the current set of information that's contained within it.
Great. Thank you, Brandon. Allison, how about
so
this?
I'm ready.
There you go. You go ahead.
I am ready with step two, and I think this is where my slides got a little off, and I apologize for that. So in step two, we've chosen phosphorus as our pollutant of concern. Let's see if I can make that thing go right here. All right. And then, and you can see that a little better. And then once we do that, we see a list of some BMPs on the right. We also see a list of secondary screening criteria pops up by itself as soon as we've chosen that yes at phosphorus. And you can see, let's see. And so we have, at this point, not chosen any secondary screening criteria, and we have 9 related practices that are available for treating phosphorus. Since our site had limited space constraints, we wanted to choose yes in the secondary screening criterion. So once we do that, then you can see in the next, we have the phosphorus is yes, and the screening criterion of limited space is yes, and our practices have been narrowed down to 6 here. So hopefully that, going through that again, helped with that question.
Awesome. Okay, well, hopefully we've got some answers there for folks to chew on a little bit. And I think maybe what we'll do now is go back to our final panelist, and that is Brandon Steets, and he's going to take you through a greater use of the BMP performance data within the tools. So go ahead, Brandon, and take it away.
Okay, great. Thanks, Rebecca. So I'm seeing so many good questions pop up. I'm really looking forward to the Q&A. It sounds like we've got a lot, and I'm looking forward to addressing a chunk of those. So I'll try to move through this as quickly as possible. So I'm with Geocentric Consultants. Geocentric Consultants is a co-principal investigator of the BMP database for WERF, ASCE, EPA, and it's an online repository available to everyone, and it amasses data from the field, from BMPs, from around the world, and there's influent and effluent data. There's guidance. There's a lot of guidance contained in there about how to collect BMP performance information and data and samples, how to analyze the data that you find in the database, how to upload and report your own data into and add it to the database, and then there are statistical tools for advanced users for mining the data. So I'm going to discuss 3 case study examples as from the practitioner lens that I face in my practice for my clients. Okay, so first one. Here's an example. An engineer assesses a site, finds that they have low infiltration rates, then seeks a flow-through treatment option that meets the aesthetic needs of the site owner, but is also effective for site-specific pollutants of concern. Let's say those are based on 303D listings and their TMDLs, and we have E. coli and total copper. So the tool, screening tool is used that Allison nicely explained, and the biofilter slash bioretention option is identified as one possibility. The question that I would ask as a practitioner is, what information can I present to show how effective my BMP will be, either to the site owner or to a regulator or to another party? It could be an interested stakeholder. It could be in the context of litigation as well. We see that quite a bit, actually. So what I'm showing here is a screenshot of the data for bioretention taken out of the tool. Allison nicely explained the column headers, so I'm not going to go into that. But if we look at E. coli, we can see that, let's see, there we go, zoom in, we have the median concentrations here with an effluent concentration of, probably not adept enough to use this pointer, but we'll give it a try. Okay, effluent concentration of 240, so we've got some relatively low E. coli, not below most recreational primary contact standards, but certainly lower than the median influent, and low copper effluent. This is lower than most water quality standards, except when you're in a marine environment. So we also see statistically significant removal happening. So what this is there's three diamonds shown here, and I know this is complicated, but the analysis of statistical difference is complicated as well. They're looking from left to right. The first diamond is looking at the with an overlap of the 95th percentile confidence interval. It's generally viewed as kind of the strongest of the tests. When that's checked off, you have a lot of confidence that you're going to have significant difference between influent and effluent. The middle one is a test using Mann-Whitney test of whether the medians are statistically different from one another. It's typically viewed kind of in general as the least strong of the three tests. And the right one, this is the one I actually use the most. This is the Wilcoxon rank sum test. It's a test of paired influent effluent data. So it's not looking at the data in aggregate like you would look at in a box and whiskers plot, but it's looking at the data as pairs, every influent being the same water that's paired together. And it's a non-parametric test that looks at how many of those pairs dropped, the concentrations dropped through the BMP. It's very useful for flow-through BMPs with short residence times like biofilter, bioretention, media filter, and any of these three individually show statistically significant difference. But the more diamonds you have, the more confidence you have, and the bigger the difference is. So the answer to this is effluent concentrations are low, and statistically significant difference is being shown. So these BMPs are effective, and we have information to present the regulator or interested stakeholders about the pollutants of concern for the site. All right, let's go now to our next slide. I think I get rid of the pointer. Okay. So what else do you look for? Because concentration reduction isn't everything. Well, you should be aware of the robustness of the data set. So, for example, here, E. coli, we have seven BMP types that the effluent concentrations and statistical difference tests are based on, which is a small number of BMP types that are tested, perhaps, but you have nearly 100 samples, or EMCs, event mean concentrations, in and out from those seven BMP types. So maybe you have an average of about 12 samples each. So in this case, it's a fairly robust set of data. The metals and nutrient data sets tend to be much more robust, as you can see in the table there. So always note your sample counts. Also note where there are pollutant concentration increases. This is really important, and it's often overlooked. So for example, you look at total phosphorus and total iron. For a bioretention type, you're going to see concentration increases for the most part, especially when you have compost as a vegetative support media. That's just widely known as an exporter of phosphorus, and you can see that borne out in the data. You see red diamonds shown here, and that's indicating confidence in a statistical increase, and you see it in the median influent effluent as well. And then in the iron data, you see a higher median than a higher out than a higher median in, although in this case, there are two tests that show removal happening with the paired data and with the second statistical test. So it's not uncommon to see export. And iron is because you have water being filtered through a soil-based media, which is predominantly iron-based. And iron is one of the largest metals in Earth's crust. So note concentration increases that you know you need to be willing to accept. If you have a phosphorus limited receiving water and an iron limit, then you may reconsider whether this is the right BMP for you. Also look at how the BMP achieves this removal. So for example, if you have metal driven toxicity, then you're going to care about bioavailable forms of metals, especially the more toxic metals. So, for example, copper. I showed previously that there was statistically significant removal of total copper happening, but when you look at dissolved copper, you see that you have less confidence in removal happening. It's only the paired test that shows removal. And you look at the influent effluent medians, and you see a higher median here in the effluent. So you're not going to have much dissolved copper removed from this BMP type. So if you have a copper sensitivity in this receiving water and it's bioavailable copper driven, it's dissolved copper driven, understand that this BMP type is not going to remove a lot of dissolved copper. The total copper removal is predominantly being achieved through particulate removal. So this is important for level setting your expectations. Another example. So running the screening tool for that site that I had where infiltration rates are poor, you're looking at flow-through options, you looked at bioretention, maybe you found that it didn't suit your needs. Maybe you have a phosphorus limitation and you're looking at other flow-through options. So media filter is another option. Now, you have to be willing to accept that it's less attractive. Media filters are generally not going to be vegetated like a bioretention will. And the media bed itself is going to be typically an engineered media mixture rather than a soil-based media mixture, which comes with benefits. Both of those things, no vegetation and engineered media, can come with benefits. So you have a question, well, how will its performance compare for my pollutants of concern? The answer is it's similar. When we look at, in this case, we have a fecal coliform data set. We've got low effluent concentrations, and we have statistically significant removal happening. For total copper, again, low effluent concentration and very statistically significant removal happening. So we're not losing anything with respect to removal of our pollutants of concern, but on the other positive side, we have no increases of phosphorus and iron like we did with bioretention. So here we show for the media filter, lower effluent median effluent concentrations for total phosphorus and statistically significant removal. Remember prior with bioretention, because of the export from the vegetative support media, there was negatives. And then total iron, because again, this is not a soil-based media, you see lower median effluent and statistically significant removal. So that's a really nice option if you're willing to accept the area not being vegetated. The other thing to note here is that there's greater confidence in nitrate increase. So before we showed a small nitrate increase for bioretention, but nitrate is so dissolved, it basically runs through these flow-through BMPs unless they have an upturned elbow with a saturated zone. So you can see like nitrate here, it's got negative removal happening in the engineered soil mixture devices. Sorry. So it's just something that we need to acknowledge, and there's a potential for pollutant export. So again, if we have a nitrate sensitivity, we might lean towards a different BMP type. All right, another example here, and I saw a question from my friend Lori about, you said industrial site. So this one is kind of an industrial site example. Let's say you have an existing site runoff at 50 micrograms per liter copper from your industrial site, but your limit is 10. So whether at the benchmark or water quality standard, you have a question, well, how consistently will media filter, in my example, meet this limit? Well, what we do is we look at the percentile data, and we can see, we look at total copper down here. We can see that, and I cherry-picked my number to make it an easy one, but 10 micrograms per liter is achieved with 75th percentile effluent concentration, so the answer is 75% of the time. One thing I will qualify, though, is that look at the influent. The influent is 17 micrograms per liter, so you really want your site to be with influent near that. Remember, I set up this example with 50 micrograms influent, so what this means is, as a designer, I'm going to probably lay out a treatment train concept. You always want pretreatment to protect your bioretention or your media filter, to knock out solids, reduce the cumulative solids loading to the device and lengthen the time until clogging. Some people say, eliminate clogging. You can't eliminate clogging. You can only lengthen the time until clogging. So with effective pretreatment, then we can look at like detention basins and inlet vaults, hydrodynamic separators, and so on, and confirm in a separate table that its effluent will be around this 17. You know, you don't have to be exact, be rough. And then that'll confirm that a media filter designed to similar specs to the filters that are built in the field and tested under this data set, they should be able to achieve the 10-75% of the time. So that should be useful. And if you want more information, I suggest looking at the BMP database statistical tools for advanced users. They have paired inflow and effluent plots that are really useful. And then you can actually take your 50 milligram per liter on the y-axis, run it across to your paired data points, and then run it down to an effluent and see what your effluent is expected to be when your inflow is that. So that's a really useful tool for advanced users. Okay, and I have one other similar example about BMP achievability. So now let's say you're a regulator and you're about to promulgate biostimulatory criteria for total nitrogen and total phosphorus. So let's say it's 1 and 0.1 milligrams per liter. This is, we commonly see this at different areas of the country. Now you can see in the data set that I'm using here media filters just for an example. You can run this question through every set of BMPs in the tables in the screening tool and answer this question one by one. But here's an example. And what you see is that for total nitrogen, which is the sum of the Kegedal nitrogen and the nitrite plus nitrate, we have a median effluent concentration that basically is around 1. It's 0.5 plus 0.57, which sums to a total nitrogen of 1.07. Again, the like I mentioned earlier, nitrate basically goes right through the BMPs. In this case, we're seeing an export. I think it's pretty similar in bioretention. And then we have removal of the particulate nitrogen and organic nitrogen, so that's why I see removal here. So to answer the question, is the BMP achievable? Are the limits achievable by these BMP types? Well, 50% of the time, roughly it is. So I think most people would characterize that as not consistently met. The same is true of phosphorus. I mentioned 0.1 milligrams per liter, and it's 0.09 as the median. So about half the time, you can meet the limit using these BMP types. Can the BMPs remove these constituents? Yes. That's demonstrated by the black diamonds. It's not true of nitrate, but it is true of total nitrogen as a whole, and it's true of total phosphorus as well. So can they removed? Yes, but are the limits achievable consistently with the BMP types? No. So hopefully that's a set of useful examples that are practical, and I'll pass the baton.
Yeah, thank you, Brandon, very much. Maybe you just want to review really briefly just what each of the diamonds means for each of the types of statistical analysis, and then what the color differential was between red and black, just as a reminder, as a take-home.
Yes. So the left diamond is whether there's overlap of the 95th percentile confidence intervals. So a picture you're looking at for people on the phone who have used the BMP database, when you go to the performance summaries, you see box and whiskers plots. You see the box that's showing like the interquartile range, and then the whiskers that show maybe like 5th to 95th percentile ranges. When you look at the confidence intervals on the median, whether they overlap in the box and whiskers plots, that's what this test is. It's the strongest test. If you don't have overlap in the medians, you have a lot of confidence that there's really a large amount of removal happening, given the variability of these kinds of data sets. The middle diamond is whether the medians are statistically different from one another. That's a Mann-Whitney test. It's typically viewed as the least strong. Any one of these individually will say whether there's a statistically significant difference there, yes or no. But the more of these tests that show a positive, the more confidence you have. Then the right one is the Wilcoxon rank sum test, which is a test of paired. So imagine not aggregating all the influent and all the effluent data, but looking at them as individual pairs. An influent sample was taken on the same storm that an effluent sample was taken. Did the concentration fall from influent to effluent? And then let's say you have 12 of those for your BMP type. Did they fall in 10 of the 12 samples? That's how the Wilcoxon rank sum test works. and it is useful for these flow-through BMPs with short residence times because you're more likely to have a sample of the kind of the same water that ran through the BMP. And this is maybe not as strong as the leftmost diamond, but it's the one I personally use the most for our various studies that we publish. And it tells you a lot about whether there's meaningful removal happening. Then the color difference, the black is showing that there's a reduction happening, a statistically significant removal of the pollutant occurring through the BMP. And red is it a negative removal? So is there net export of the pollutant? Are effluent concentrations higher than influent? So that's really important to be aware of. It's a concession Great. You're making with a BMP selection decision.
Great. Thank you, Brandon, so much. We are eating up our time very quickly today, and I hope to hear more from the audience. Does anyone on the phone have a question they'd like to just speak or ask out loud? Feel free to unmute by hitting #6 and just jump right in and cut me off. We'll be happy to take your questions verbally as much as in writing. We've got a lot of questions over on the right-hand side. Hopefully you folks are able to keep up pace with that. And in the meanwhile, we've got a question at the bottom, another poll, gauging your interest in the development of a national program to certify BMP effectiveness. And this refers to then effectively what is being built here in the U.S. Slowly but surely, it is the STEP program. And we've spoken with STEP all along through the process of developing our technical guidance document and the tool within. And as Brandon was alluding to just now, you've heard a lot about the BMP International Database, but there's also a great deal of information in the technical guidance document about the New Jersey CAT program and the Washington TAPE program. If you're not familiar with those, either of those programs and their verification process, I encourage you to read through the document itself, and it is a very easy read. We've very much focused in on making this easy and effective for the state regulator or local regulator to use, but it's really for anyone and everyone who is within the stormwater industry. It is, I think, a grand total of everything, all told 75 pages long, I think. And so if you want to just pick and choose a portion of the guidance that is effective for your state, we certainly think that that is practical for you to use. Anyone on the phone with a question? In the meanwhile, I will say we had a great question come in before today's session, and I'll just punt this to any of the panelists. The question was, is there a guidance on how to select target treatment goals for a system? For example, at what point does cost to treat no longer result in meaningful reduction in pollutant concentration? And effectively, what's our asymptotic gauge?
This is Brandon. I love this question. There's a great document that was written in the 90s. It's a book. It's WEF's Manual of Practice. And it looks at this question of cost-benefit and point of diminishing returns with respect to sizing. I think the question is better evaluated through sizing than on water quality performance. At least it's easier to evaluate that way. And it shows across the country the percentile rain events. And, you know, a lot of people don't know where different permits set their sizing criteria, their design storms, but this is where it came from. So the 85th percentile event, for example, usually comes out as the knee in the curve. It's a point of diminishing returns, above which the cost increases are substantial, but the water quality capture benefits become marginal, and so it's the return on investment becomes less. So that's a great document that I'd point folks to.
Awesome.
In addition, this is Pat, there are some, for industrial sites, there are some guidance documents on the Washington Department of Ecology's webpage that look at implementation costs and O&M costs of different technologies over time and doing the analysis to kind of compare treatment types for industrial treatment systems.
Great. Thank you, Patrick. Any other questions on the phone? And that's okay, too. You can always just keep typing them in that Q&A panel section in the bottom right-hand corner. Love the feedback on the question of development of a national certification program for BMP effectiveness. You can see that we've got a great deal of folks that have some interest at a minimum and a good about a third of our audience today has a significant level of interest. And just to speak to that really briefly, we thought we'd share an update from the STEP program through WEF. And the STEP program, according to the latest and greatest hot off the presses update, they've been engaging lately with the ASTM to develop a draft performance testing standard for hydrodynamic separators. And this is based upon the NJCAT protocol. So this is what we're thinking of as the first effort to nationalize state testing protocols more formally. And they have been, the business development group within ASTM has been signaling interest in creating a new stormwater-oriented body within ASTM. And this would be something beyond the existing parameters of the precast concrete products C27.70 group. So that task group, look for that to form hopefully in the future, in the not-too-distant future. But the technical program for the STEP program, if it moves forward, is going to be focusing on using the Washington Tape and NJCAT and Canadian ETV programs and focusing on identifying strengths and weaknesses of each of those and helping support the development of sort of a straw man version of what the STEP program process for testing and evaluation would look like. They've also been working on the business planning and funding piece and outreach and engagement as well. Of course, they're trying to focus on a better understanding of the entire universe of technologies that should be tested not only now but into the future, and that is, of course, maybe the Wild West, correct? and so they're also looking to engage with large municipal potential partners and philanthropy groups. Any funding sources that are being discussed now really have no end to the extent of who could be a part of that. So the outreach and engagement piece, of course, has been with ACWA and ASTM and others all along. And, of course, our group is maintaining focus with them, trying to make sure that we're all staying interconnected within these organizations to help move forward the idea of a national certification program. Their most recent survey came out with results saying that over 90% of the 30 states identified this as an issue and expressed support for the concept of a national testing program. So we certainly hope that you folks have learned more about not only these national programs, but the verification programs like Washington Tape and New Jersey CAT that already exist, not least of which then bolsters that, and that's the international database that Brandon's been speaking a great deal to. And any questions that you have regarding the use of our tool that helps you find a smaller list of effective BMPs for your site and then helps you understand the effectiveness of that BMP performance on the back end, we certainly hope that you're going to dig into that tool and the guidance document to find out more about all of these topics. And I would welcome any last questions from the audience today or any of our panelists as well. Any last input for the day?
There's a couple of questions here that we can knock off pretty quick. There's a question from Jean Oliva, I'm sure I'm butchering that, about the availability of the actual paired data plots. You can go to the bmpdatabase.org, and then on the bottom right, click Online Statistical Analysis Tool. And if you're having trouble working with the tool, it takes a while to update. There's a lot of data there. You can download the Access database yourself and mine the data yourself and look at the data as paired data points. And then the question about the screening tools assessment of the different kinds of pesticides, no, it generalized. So in the BMP database, you can look up individual pesticides, and the data are probably going to be limited, but you can find what's there to see what information is available. I would also recommend looking at pollutants with similar physicochemical properties. So, you know, if you look at like a dioxin or PCB or chlorinated pesticides, you can assume that there's similar removal happening. And then for the dissolved constituents, again, you can assume similar, usually lack of removal happening.
Great. Thank you, Brandon. And I think we'll hand it over now to Mary.
All right. Thank you, Rebecca. Well, we've come to the end of our time today. We very much appreciate everybody for joining us today. We do have a couple last poll questions up we would ask that you would complete. If we have not addressed your question fully, please email us at training@itrcweb.org, and we'll do our best to reach out to our panelists and responders to get you a response. We very much appreciate the panelists and responders' time today and that they're volunteers for ITRC, and they've spent not only time preparing for this event, but also several years working on the associated guidance document. So again, we could just give you some introduction on how you may want to use the guidance document. What we do encourage you to explore that guidance document in detail to see how it may assist you on your sites. For more information about ITRC, we encourage you to visit the ITRC website, both more information on guidance documents as well as upcoming training events. For those of you that do need documentation of continuing education, be sure to fill out that online feedback form. Once you fill out that form, on the bottom of that form, there is a box for you to click to certify you participated today. And once you do that and click Submit, a certificate will be generated for you. So I think that's going to wrap us up today. However, if you are, it looks like some of our panelists will be able to stick around just a few more minutes. If you do have any questions and want to stay on the line, either to submit online or verbally, you're welcome to do so. For the rest of you, thanks so much for joining us, and we hope you'll participate on a future IT